I thank you very much for coming to attend this auspicious event this evening in this very beautiful place. My special gratitude to Srinathji Prabhu, Dr. Desai, and his wonderful family for providing such a beautiful atmosphere for us to come together this evening. Yesterday we celebrated Ram Navami, the appearance day of Sri Ramchandra. And in the evening we spoke for some time from Sri Ramayana by Valmiki Muni. I was requested to briefly continue the narration this evening with your permission. Can anyone remember where we ended last night? Vishwamitra Muni brought Sri Ram and Lakshman to Mithila. And there, Sita and Ram, who are eternally united in spiritual loving devotional reciprocation in the spiritual world, revived their relationship within this world. As soon as Sita gazed upon the beautiful form of Sri Ram, her eternal, unlimited love awakened within her heart. And similarly, Ram's love for Sita. Effortlessly, Ram broke the bow of Shiva, and Sita Devi placed the garland of victory around his neck to great cheers of joy. Dasarath, when he received the news in Ayodhya, was overwhelmed with happiness because he was just discussing with his ministers and family members that it is the suitable time to find a bride for Ramchandra. Just when Vishwamitra Muni came. Now Vishwamitra Muni asked him to do something which was the most difficult thing he had ever done in his life. Dasarath Maharaj, he was given this name, Dasarath, because when he fought in battle, even against formidable forces, it was as if he was fighting with in 10 directions simultaneously. Yes, he fought great battles. He overcame great political adversity. But there was nothing more difficult in his whole life than to give his 16-year-old son, Sri Ram, to Vishwamitra Muni to take away from Ayodhya, to fight with powerful Rakshasa demons, Subahu and Maricha. Dasarath pleaded, he begged, "I'll go myself, I'll give you all my armies, I'll give you the whole kingdom, I'll give you anything, but do not take Ram away from me." But Vishwamitra Muni became angry. "You have given your word, anything I ask you will give. Now you will disgrace the integrity of your entire line." Then Vishishtha Muni convinced Dasarath, "Give Ram." So not only did Ram gain eternal fame by subduing Maricha, killing Subahu, and preserving the sanctity of the great sages who were performing their pious acts in the forest. But now he was to marry the most qualified, beautiful of all ladies in the universal creation, the daughter of King Janak, Sita. Dasarath Maharaj realized that when you surrender to God and those true, pure-hearted souls who represent God, you're never the loser. But you always gain. Sarva dharman putityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yisami masujaha. Krishna says in Sri Bhagavad Gita that abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to me. I will relieve you of all sinful reactions, do not fear. When we have the association of saintly people, we develop faith. Faith that if we actually give our hearts to the Lord, we will gain. We will gain not only greatness in this world, but beyond. So yes, all Dasarath Maharaj's desires were fulfilled by the blessings of the great Rishi, Vishwamitra. So, Dasarath Maharaj immediately made all arrangements to bring his ministers and the highest people of his government, family members, to Mithila for the marriage. When he arrived, Janak Maharaj came to greet him. They were like two brothers. Although they were great, powerful kings of mighty dynasties from various parts of the world, because they both had such deep faith and devotion to the Lord, they were like brothers. They had complete trust, complete faith in the integrity, the honesty, and the goodness of each other's hearts. Maharaj Janak actually revealed a secret, that Sita, his daughter, when she was just a little girl, her mind was fixed that she would not marry anyone except Lord Vishnu. That was just her natural love. Now, every prince and every other type of great person in the universe wanted to marry her because of her good qualities. She was divine in every sense. But he understood the heart of his daughter. She only wanted to marry Lord Vishnu. So Maharaj Dasarath understood the only person who could possibly lift and string the bow of Shiva is Vishnu. So he made this vow that no one will take the hand of Sita in marriage except that person who can string after lifting the bow of Shiva. In doing so, he protected the desire of his daughter, that only Vishnu can do this. So when Ram effortlessly performed this glorious feat, he could understand with realization that Ram is not an ordinary human being. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has descended into this world. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijanya paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami juge juge. The Lord descends to this world out of causeless mercy. to deliver the pious, to annihilate misconceptions and obstacles, and to reestablish the true principles of Dharma. When they were arranging for the marriage, Vasishtha Muni and Vishwamitra Muni, they recommended that you have three other sons, Bharat, Lakshman, Shatrughna. Since this auspicious event is about to happen, why not them get married also? Sita has a younger sister named Urmila. Let her marry Lakshman. And Janak Maharaj had a brother named Kushudvaja. He has two very, very divine, virtuous daughters, Mandavi and Srutakirti. So it was arranged. Bharat would marry Mandavi and Shatrughna would marry Srutakirti. Valmiki Muni and other great authors of Ram's Leela have described in great detail the wonderful, wonderful event of this marriage. King Janaka decorated the arena so beautifully. There was a yajna with tens and thousands of Brahmas chanting mantras. Beautiful, beautiful canopy over the marriage arena that was made out of marble of the finest quality, bedecked with diamonds, emeralds, rubies, lapis lazulis, and other various precious jewels, gold and silver. Extraordinary fragrant flowers of many hundreds of varieties were decorating in all directions. And all the citizens were dressed with the best possible clothing that they had. It was actually the culmination of what everyone in Mithila was praying for and longing for. Because their life and soul was simply the happiness of Sita. When the four young princes came to the arena with their father Dasarath, everyone was, their eyes were gazing upon them with tears flowing of ecstasy. And then the four brides came with Janaka and Kushudvaja. Vasishtha Muni was the head priest. He placed Ram's hand on top of Sita. Then Maharaj Janak poured water on their hands and made a vow that I entrust my daughter in your loving care. She will be faithful, and in good or in hardship, in every situation, she will be at your side. Like the shadow, she will be like your own self. Whatever comes in your life, I vow that my daughter will always be with you to serve you and to give you pleasure. And then the other young princesses were given to the brothers of Sri Ram. They circumambulated the sacred fire. They gave in charity to the great rishis. It was a wonderful event. As they were returning to Ayodhya, they met with Parasuram. Parasuram, all of a sudden the whole atmosphere became inauspicious. Darkness and thundering sounds and vultures and jackals crying out. what is this? And then the mighty warrior, the son of Jamadagni, appeared before them. Now Dasarath Maharaj recognized him. No Kshatriyas wanted ever to see Parasaram, because he annihilated 22 generations of Kshatriyas after one of them killed his father, knowing that they were a corrupted race. He was carrying a mighty bow. He looked at Sri Ram and said, "You broke the bow of Shiva." That was a very, very serious act, and I'm taking it very seriously. This is the bow of Vishnu. They were both constructed by Vishwakarma. The difference is this bow is much more powerful than Shiva's. If you cannot break this bow, then you must fight with me. And if you do break this bow, not break it, string it, I'm sorry. If you can string this bow, then I see you are actually qualified to battle a war against me. Hare Krishna. So Dasarath Maharaj was trembling because his son was only 16 years old. And he considered him just his boy. How is he going to fight against Parasuram, who held a bow in one hand and an axe in the other? Ram took the bow, lifted it, strung it, and took the arrow, the effulgent, deadly arrow of Parasuram, and pointed it right at him, and said, "Where should I shoot this arrow?" When Parasaram saw the power of Ram, something extraordinary happened. All of the power that he had disappeared. He became pale and weak-looking and happy. He said that Vishnu gave me all of my powers and told me that when the day comes when I descend on the earth, I'm going to take all of those powers back. I can understand you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. You are my worshipable Lord. The day that I was longing for has come. You have appeared before my eyes. I worship you. I surrender to you. Now you're asking what to do with that mighty arrow of Vishnu? Please, take that arrow and destroy all my desires for happiness in this world. Destroy all my happiness, even for happiness in the heavenly worlds. Destroy all my desires, even for mystic powers or liberation, so that my only desire in my heart is your eternal loving service. With that, Ramchandra shot the arrow. And as he shot it, Parasaram, in great happiness, disappeared with all of his desires fulfilled. Then the Lord called for Varuna to take the arrow of Vishnu and hold it on behalf of the devatas. Then they proceeded to Ayodhya. And how happily they lived. Sitaram resided in a beautiful, beautiful palace. A palace that even Indra never had seen before in his own heavenly abode. As Ram grew, it was the very, very deep desire of all the citizens of Ayodhya that he be coronated as the prince regent, the next king. Ramchandra was the personified embodiment of all qualities that attracted everyone's heart. Although he was so very, very learned, he was always respectful to others. His intelligence far surpassed even Brihaspati. But he was inquiring and seeking permission and blessings from his superiors at all times. Although he had mastered all types of weapons and warfare, he was so gentle. He was so kind. Although he was loved by everyone, although he was honored and worshipped in the hearts of all living beings, no one had ever seen anyone so humble. There was not even a trace of false pride in his heart. His humility just melted everyone's hearts. Although Sri Ram was glorious in every way, he treated every living being with compassion, with respect, and with love. Without discrimination, whether one was an animal or whether one was just considered socially an outcast living in the jungles, or whether one was a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, male, female, young, old, rich, poor. He was like a father to everyone. He was a humble servant to every living being. Was willing to give his life to help everyone he met. Therefore, seeing these qualities in him, he lived by the highest standards of morality, ethics, and compassion. People simply loved him. It wasn't a matter of Ram having to go to the polls and run for office. 100% of everyone in the entire kingdom just had such deep love for him because of his spiritual qualities. They longed for the day when he would be on the throne. Understanding that Kushudbaj, the father of Bharat, and Shatrughna, his wives, was having difficulties in his kingdom, Dasarath Maharaj, in great compassion, he sent Bharat and Shatrughna to spend some time with this father-in-law and to help him to manage the kingdom nicely. While they were away, the Brahmins and the astrologers, they were seeing very, very mysteriously dark signs coming. And they explained this to Dasarath Maharaj. So Dasarath Maharaj came to the assembly and called all his ministers and representatives of all the classes of society and very lovingly asked them to approve of his idea. He said, "I want to put Ram on the throne. Therefore, I want to coronate him as the prince regent, the next king. There's inauspicious signs coming. I'm afraid that something may come to interrupt that coronation. So my desire is to do it tomorrow before anything can interrupt it. What is your desire? Because I cannot do anything without the blessings of all of you. And everyone there, with tears of joy in their eyes, rejoiced. Yes, that is our desire. That is what we are longing for. That is what we are waiting for. So all the arrangements were being made. And there wasn't time for Bharat and Satrughna to come, because it was going to be the next day. That was, although Dasarath Maharaj made all arrangements so expertly, somehow or other, he just overlooked that one detail. So, we know the story. And because this event tonight is such a happy event, we will not discuss this story. We will fast forward Valmiki's Ramayana. But in very brief, everyone was joyful, everyone was happy. But that night, Kaikeyi, who was the second wife of Dasarath, she was as happy as Kausalya. She loved Ram. She was so happy that Ram was going to be coronated as prince regent. And then her maidservant, Mantara, came into her private chambers. And she was just practically dancing around in joy at the event that she was waiting for. But Mantara, said, "Why are you so happy? Don't you know what's happening? When Ram is made king, Bharat will be banished because he's superior to Ram. Don't you see the writings on the wall? You must stop it. Your husband gave you two boons. Banish Ram to the forest for 14 years and make Bharat king." Now I'm fast forwarding. Mantara, it took her a long time to convince Kaikeyi. And by her association, she became cruel-hearted, hard-hearted, and demoniac. How is this possible? She was a loving, virtuous devotee of Ram, who changed in every way. She became spiteful, envious, and hateful. This is a very important lesson. Because this is how material energy works. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnara Nitya Das. Every living being is by nature a loving servant of God. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajya Kabunoi Sravanadi Sudhi Cheti Koriye Udhoi. The pure love of God is within every heart of every living being. We are all part of Krishna. The body is a gross vehicle, or as Gita explains, like a gross dress that we're temporarily wearing. And a subtle body of the mind, intelligence, and ego is a subtle covering. But they are both temporary. The Atma, the soul, is the true identity of every person. Unfortunately, in today's world, the most important of all knowledge is neglected. Gita describes Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitramitam Uttamam. The king of knowledge, the most important of all knowledge, is to understand who we are, what is our nature, and to act according to that nature. The various professions, trades, or forms of education that we get in the worldly sense are meant to give us abilities, intelligence and abilities by which we could perform our the work of the soul. Just like, for instance, Arjuna was a warrior. He learned from Dronacharya the art of being a warrior very well as a statesman and a politician. But he did it with he used it all with the wisdom of the Gita to understand who I am and what is the real fulfillment of my inner spiritual desires. What is my relationship with God? Who am I? Where am I coming from? Why is there suffering? Who is God? What is my relationship with God? What is the nature of death and what is beyond? These are the fundamental, most basic, essential questions of life. And previously in this world, in actually cultured, civilized societies, this was the basic foundation of all knowledge. And then mathematics and language and technology and science is built upon that foundation to do wonderful things in this world. But unfortunately, in this age of Kali, there is a widespread, unfortunate epidemic of avidya or ignorance. In fact, Gita explains the nature of Kali, that what is religion is taken to be irreligion, and what is irreligion is taken to be religion. What is the purpose of yoga? Religion, spirituality. It is to purify the heart and awaken the natural divine propensities within us. And then according to our occupation, or according to our duties in this world, we express that inner revelation of divinity. Aham Bija Pratapita. Krishna tells, I am the supreme father of all living entities, the supreme mother of all living entities. So to love God naturally, spontaneously, love of every living being is inevitable. Compassion to every living being is inseparable from a pure heart. So today, sectarianism, bigotry, terrorism, in the name of God, what does that mean? That means no understanding, no revelation, simply taking egoistic contaminations of the heart and labeling them as religion. Without a philosophy. So yes, Kaikeyi, she was a pure soul. She loved Ram. She was a compassionate mother. She loved Ram as Kausalya loved Ram from his very birth. But by the association of this mantra, gradually her mind became corrupted. So association is so very, very important for our youth and for everybody, because who you associate with is what you become. Our Gurudev would give the example, if you put iron rod in fire, it becomes hot like fire. If you say, no, it's an iron rod, touch it, and you will be burnt as if you touched fire directly. So if we associate with people who are filled with envy, anger, greed, pride, then those qualities inevitably will affect us. If we don't think they will, that means we're really being affected. It's not a matter of maybe they will or maybe they won't. It's the law of nature. What you associate with, you take those qualities. Therefore, the Shastra tells us, sadhu sanga sarva sastra koi lava matra sadhu sanga sarva siddhi hoy. If you associate with sadhu, real sadhu, one who is actually pure in heart, one who is actually servant of all living beings in the service of God, one who actually has a taste not to criticize others but to chant and glorify God, that association awakens those qualities that are dormant within our own heart and gives us the determination to follow the process of purification by which we can attain spiritual perfection. So Kaikeyi, she just associated with the wrong person. But actually, it was the Devatas that orchestrated this whole thing, because they wanted Ram in the forest so that he would meet Ravana.
Harivo.
Because they understood this was actually his mission, not to live happily in Ayodhya. So we know the rest of the story. Kaikeyi devastated Dasarath with these demands. And Ram and Sita and Lakshman were sent into the forest. The whole city of Ayodhya was in utter devastation. Sita insisted. Ram said, "You stay home. You must stay home and take care of my parents." But Sita said, after pleading with Ram, he said, no, you cannot come. There's tigers and there's lions and there's snakes and there's rakshasas and there's no nice food. There's no house. There's no bedding. It's very hard to live in the forest for 14 years. For those whole 14 years, Ram was so strict, he never entered into a village, a town, or a city. He remained exclusively in forest. Never ate anything except wild fruits and roots and herbs. So he insisted, "Sita, you must stay." But Sita wept and cried that for me to be in hell with you would be better than heaven. And for me to be in heaven without you would be worse than hell. But then finally she said, "My father vowed at the time of marriage that I would be with you through auspicious times and hardships. You cannot make my father into a liar. I'm coming with you." But she was very intelligent. And then Lakshman said, "I'm coming too." And there was no way to convince him otherwise. When the people of Ayodhya saw Kaikeyi give Sita tree bark to live in, they just simply wept as she couldn't figure out how to put it on. And they entered the forest. But the problem is, as they went, Dasarath begged them not to go, but Ram said, "No, you have given your word. I must protect your integrity." Sumantra was their charioteer. Thousands and thousands of people from Ayodhya followed. They couldn't give him up. Ram got on the charioteer and said, "Sumantra, just drive fast. We have to get away from these people. They'll never give me up." So these old Brahmins who could hardly walk were running as fast as they could after the chariot. And they were crying out, "Ram, Ram, we are Brahmins. How can you be? You are Namo Brahmanya Devaya. You are supposed to be giving pleasure to Brahmins. How are you giving us so much pain? Protect us. We'll die running so fast." So Ram was thinking, because he was such a follower of Dharma, that I cannot be on the chariot if the Brahmins are walking. So he had to get off his chariot and walk with the Brahmins. So how to escape? They went a long way that day. And in the night, Lakshman made a bed out of leaves for Sita and Ram to lay on. And all the people of Ayodhya just dropped in the ground sleeping. They walked a long way. And in the middle of the night, Ram woke up Sita and Ram, and Sumantra and said, "Let's go now, before they wake up. Otherwise, we'll never part from them. They'll never let me go." So they disappeared. And when the citizens of Ayodhya woke up, they were looking everywhere, but they couldn't find any chariot wheels because they were going in and out of different rivers just purposely, just so the tracks could not be traced. And they returned. Then Maharaj Guha appeared. Ram came to a certain area of the jungle, the deep jungle, which happened to be the kingdom of the Nishada king Guha. Now this Guha, he called it his kingdom, but actually it was just a few thatched huts. So he came before Ram and greeted him. And Lakshman told him what had happened, that Ram had been banished for 14 years. So Guha Maharaj told Ram, he said, "Actually, I am the king of this whole jungle. And whatever is mine is yours. I surrender my body. I surrender my mind. I surrender my life. I surrender all my citizens. I surrender the entire kingdom to yours, to you, my lord. You are the proprietor. I and all others are your humble, obedient servants. Now please, come into my city." And Lakshman looked at it and said, "That is not a city." And he said, "It is, because as soon as Ram's feet touch it, it becomes non-different than Ayodhya. Because wherever Ram is, that is Ayodhya. That is the supreme kingdom of God." But Ram said, "No. I have promised my father I will not enter even into a village like this. I must remain in the jungle." Guha prayed, "Well, please at least spend the night with us." Ram agreed. He stayed in the outskirts, in the forest. Guha Maharaj brought all kinds of nice edibles from the forest. Nice edibles. Ram said, "Give them to my horses. I will only take some water. I cannot eat these foods." He said, "I will construct a nice hut for you in the forest." Ram said, "No hut, just a bed of leaves." Maharaj Guha brought all the Nishada race that was his to meet Sri Ram. He begged the Lord to meet his people because he understood if they see him just once, they will be liberated. They will attain supreme good fortune. So all of the followers of Guha Maharaj came to offer gifts and flowers and garlands to Sri Ram, whatever little they had. And they bowed their heads and worshipped him, and he blessed them. He laid in the bed of leaves. Actually, Ram asked only one thing. He asked only one thing from Guha Maharaj's people. He said, "Bring me the sap from the banyan tree." Now, There's no use for the sap of a banyan tree. You can't drink it, you can't eat it. But they brought him the sap of the banyan tree, and right in front of Lakshman and Sita's eyes, and Maharaj Guha as well, he took that sap and matted his hair with it. Just like the ascetics who live in the forest. It was too painful for them to see. Ram spent the night there. Guha Maharaj said to Lakshman, "You should also take rest with Ram and Sita." Lakshman said, "No. Until the 14 years expires, I will not take rest. I will be at the service of Ram 24 hours a day." Guha Maharaj said, "But I've already arranged all the females in my kingdom to spend the whole night chanting Ram's names. And all the males are standing with weapons in circle guarding Ram. So all night long, Guha Maharaj and Lakshman sat together discussing the glories of Sri Ramchandra. Lakshman told the whole series of events leading up to the exile of Sri Ram. Maharaj Guha's heart was, it was just overwhelmed with grief. How is it possible? He's the king of Ayodhya. He's the king of the world. He's the king of the universe. And he's living in a jungle. There should be the royal canopy over his head. But instead, there's just a tree. He should be in the finest clothes. But instead, he's in tree bark. He should have all the greatest ministers around, surrounding him. But now there's just deers and animals surrounding him. He should be eating the finest foods, but he won't even eat anything but some roots. How could I bear this? Impossible. But Lakshman preached to him. And the next morning, Sri Ram bid farewell. He told Sumantra, the charioteer, "Go back to Ayodhya and tell Dasarath Maharaj that I am fulfilling his word and I have entered into the forest. And tell him I'm in good health and very happy." "And tell Bharat that I congratulate him. He will be the king, and that he should please take care of my aged parents as well and rule the citizens in the light of pure Dharma." Sumantra begged. He said, "I cannot go back to Ayodhya. If I go back without you on the chariot, that will be the death blow to all of the citizens. How will I explain to them? I will be at your side as your servant for the next 14 years. But Ramchandra ordered him to return. So, as Sumantra was about to leave, he saw Sita with tears in her eyes. Just a young girl in the middle of the dark forest. Ramchandra was to cross the river Ganga. It is said there was a boatman named Keva. Yes? And he was sitting on boat. And Ramchandra asked him, please take me across the river. And he said he didn't agree to take him. This was very strange. He was just such a detached person. He was just sitting on the boat, completely oblivious to all material things. Ram said, please, please, take me across the river. Now, this is a strange event because the demigods, the sages, the rishis, all living beings are asking God for benedictions. And here is the Supreme God asking a very simple, poverty-stricken little boatman for a benediction. He was from the Beal race, which is just forest dwellers. And he just had one little boat, and that was it. That was his life. Here is the Lord of the universe, the King of all living beings. And as I say, in all religions, everyone is asking God for benedictions. And here God is in such a state that he's asking this simple, poor little boatman for a benediction. Then please, take me across the river. And the boatman said, no, I will not take you across the river. He said, why? Why will you not take me across the river? He said, because I know the story about you. The dust of your lotus feet is so powerful that the dust of your lotus feet touched a stone and it turned into Ahalya, a beautiful woman, the wife of a great sage. So if you place your feet and the dust of your feet touch my boat, then it may turn into a beautiful woman. Then what will happen to my career? I'm a boatman. I only have one boat. There's nothing else in my life. I have to maintain my family. If my boat becomes a beautiful sage's woman, a beautiful saintly lady, then I may have to marry her, and then my expenditures will increase. And I'll have no means to support them. So no, this will not happen. If you want to come on my boat, then you must first allow me to wash your lotus feet, to remove all the dust. So Ramchandra saw that actually he was speaking with very deep and pure devotion, with great humility, with a very deep desire to serve. So the Lord said, yes, you may wash my feet. At that time, he started running. Ram said, where are you going? He said, I'm going home to bring my relatives and everyone, because they should also get the benefits of this. So he came back with a wooden bowl. It was the same wooden bowl that he used to use to empty the water out of the boat when it came in. His wife said, we should somehow get a golden bowl or a silver bowl or at least a copper bowl, because it's the Supreme Lord's lotus feet we're washing. He said, no, wood is better because wood absorbs. Wood will absorb, and then we'll take that wooden bowl and we'll cook all our rotis in it, and we'll do all of our cooking with this bowl, and then we'll always be eating the prasad of the lotus feet of the Lord. So with that wooden bowl, he filled it with Ganga water and placed Lord Sri Ram's lotus feet in that bowl and massaged and washed them there. Then he took that water and he drank it, sprinkled on in his head, and he gave it to all of his relatives to drink and sprinkle on his head. And by doing so, he told Sri Ram that now not only myself and all my family, but all my ancestors, my forefathers have been delivered because you have allowed me to do this service. Sri Ram came on the boat and he rowed it to the other side. When they came to the other side, Ram wanted to offer some payment to Keva, but he didn't have anything because he was living in the forest as an ascetic. He took nothing from Ayodhya with him. Now, when any of us go on a trip, we take baggage, yes? Toiletries and extra clothes and baggage. Even if we go for 2 days to Delhi or something. He was going out for 14 years and he took nothing with him. Sita, seeing the heart of her Lord, she had one ring on her finger. Beautiful golden ring with a jewel on it. She took it off, placed it in Ram's hand, and asked her to give it to Keva as payment. When Ram offered it, he refused to take it. He said, "I cannot take this ring. This is the beautiful jewelry of Sita Devi. How could I take it from her?" "No." Said Ram, "What do you owe me? All I did is take you across this little river. But what have you done for me? By accepting my service to you, you have taken me across the entire ocean of birth and death. You have taken limitless souls across the ocean of all sufferings. By accepting my service, if you want to give me a benediction, just grant me one benediction. That I will, for the rest of eternity, my heart and my mind will be immersed in remembering you in pure affection. That is all I desire. I will not take the ring." Ram was very pleased and granted that benediction. And then he asked for one more benediction. He said, "If you come back this way, let me wash your feet and take you across the river again." Sita Devi, she offered a prayer to Mother Ganga. With folded palms, she prayed that Ganga Devi, we are now beginning our 14-year sojourn in the forest. Please give us this blessing that Sri Ram and Lakshman and myself, that in 14 years we will safely and happily come back to cross over you again to enter into our eternal home of Ayodhya." And with those words, they departed. They came. How late should I go, Srinathji Prabhu? Because the story could take many days. So it will be good if you give a time limit. Yes, please. I think devotees want prasad. That is a safe guess. I will fast forward again. Thank you. They came to Prayag. the Tribeni Sangam of Ganga, Jamuna, Saraswati, when they arrived at Prayag, just at the place of the Sangam was the hermitage of Bharadvaj Muni, one of the great sages, one of the disciples of the great Rishi, brought Ram, Lakshman and Sita to his guru. Ram, Lakshman and Sita, with great veneration, folded hands, they offered their prayers and respects to the great sadhu. Bharadvaj Muni understood that this is my eternal supreme lord, Sri Ram, who has descended into this world for a glorious mission of mercy. It was explained to him exactly what had taken place in Ayodhya and the Lord's banishment to the forest. The great sage said to Ram, "This is wonderful. Stay with me for the next 14 years. There's no holier place than Prayag, and I have a wonderful ashram, and we have so many disciples. They will take so nice care of you. We have nice fruits and nice roots. We can make a nice cottage for you. It's a holy place. Stay here." And Ram said, "I accept your offering, but I cannot stay here." Because when the Lord accepts, He accepts the intention of the heart. Prabhupada explains that the Supreme Lord accepts the purpose in which everything is offered. Not necessarily the thing, but the purpose in which it is offered. He accepts the purpose. So because Bharadvaj Muni was offering everything he had with such love and genuine devotion, the Lord accepted that devotion. "Yes, I have accepted, but I cannot stay here, because it is too much of a famous place. And the people of Ayodhya, they will find out that I am here, and they will be continuously coming and begging me to return to Ayodhya. That will be too difficult for them to bear and too difficult for me also. So please, if you know of a place, tell me where I can go, where it is extremely secluded and quiet, where no one will go except the great sages and ascetics of the forest." Bharadvaj Muni said, "I know the perfect place. It's just about 50 miles from here through the jungles. Cross over the river Yamuna and then follow my directions through these forests. You will find the most beautiful of all holy places. It is the mountain Chitrakoot. Chitrakoot Mountain. It is like a blue hill with towering peaks covered with snow. And the lower part of the mountain is so deeply rich with vegetation. Every type of auspicious tree. There are thousands of various colored flowers growing on those trees. There is pure water of the Mandakini Ganga that flows beneath it. And on the mountain, there is crystalline waterfalls and streams. There's herds of blissful elephants, thousands of peaceful deers, thousands of varieties of colorful birds always singing blissful songs. And great ascetics who have completely given up all ego and all materialistic greed are residing there. And at any moment you will see hundreds of sacred fires where they are performing their pujas. Many little hermitage where they are absorbed in meditation on the form of the Lord and the chanting of the Lord's names. You will be completely satisfied in the forest of Chitrakoot. Go there and please be happy. So Sri Ramchandra spent the night with Bharat Rajamuni, and the next day on his instructions he crossed over Yamuna. Lakshman built a raft made out of bamboo and twines in which they crossed. And they walked forward. On about the third day, they saw the extraordinary beauty of Chitrakoot Hill. Ram, Lakshman, and Sita were breathtaking to see the environment. It was more beautiful than heaven. So natural, so peaceful, so pure. They walked and began to climb the mountain. There was a plateau. On that plateau was the hermitage of the great sage Valmiki. Sri Ram, Lakshman, and Sita came and with great humility folded hands, bowed their heads at the feet of Valmiki Muni. Valmiki Muni lifted them and embraced Sri Ram with great love, knowing that this was his worshipable Lord, who was appearing like an ordinary human being. Ramchandra, with great humility, inquired submissively about the life of Valmiki Muni. The great sage explained the whole series of events that took place in his life, which again shows the power of the blessings of a great soul, how transformational they are in a person's life. He said, "Previously, I was a hunter and a highway robber." In other words, he was a dacoit. He used to rob people. He was a violent person and commit abominable sins. One day Narada Muni came into his forest. And he went to rob Narada Muni. And Narada Muni was very intelligent. He said, he actually revealed to him the types of sins and the types of reactions he was going to get. He said, "Now you go back to your family and you tell them, ask them a question. I'm providing so much for you of material things. You're taking that, but will you also accept a portion of the sins and the reactions that I have committed?" Valmiki said, "Of course they will. Of course they will. They love me." "So will you ask them?" So he went back and they said, "You know, I've been robbing and causing violence to others to bring you all the wealth that you have. Are you willing to accept the reactions of the sins and share them with me?" And every member of the family said, "No way. We will not take these sins. We know what you've been doing." So Valmiki Muni became very sober. And he came back to Narada Muni and said, "How could I be free from all these sinful reactions? Because they're all on my head." Narada Muni said, "You chant the name of Ram." But he was such a violent person, the name of Ram could not come from his mouth. But Narada Muni was such a compassionate preacher. He was not just a fundamentalist that lived by the letter of the scriptures. He was very practical. Somehow or other, you have to save somebody by whatever means is possible, even if it's unorthodox. So he said, "You are very much a devotee of killing people, yes?" "Oh, yeah." "Mara is the name of the Lord of Death." "Yes, yes." "Chant the name Mara." That was very much flowing from his mouth. Just Mara, Mara, Marama, Rama, 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 and Mara became Rama. And by chanting the name of Rama, under the guidance and the directions and blessings of the great Narada, his heart became completely pure. And he was living in ashram in Chitrakoot. After speaking his life and giving teachings of the holy scriptures and the sages, Ram told Lakshman that we should make our home close to Valmiki Muni and all these other sages on this beautiful hill of Chitrakoot. Lakshman very enthusiastically just got pieces of wood and made a structure of a house and then filled it in with a straw roof and basic just leaves and twigs and vines for the walls. Ramchandra started a sacred fire and petitioned all auspiciousness of the higher powers. And then after doing that, he and Sita entered into the house. There they lived so happily. One day, Ramchandra was expressing to Sita that the beauty of Ayodhya is not even a fraction in comparison to this. Being with you and with Lakshman in this enchanting environment, all my desires are so fulfilled. So just look. Look at the plush, ripened fruits on every tree. Smell the scents of intoxicating flowers. Look at the elephants and the deers and hear the birds and see the beautiful Mandakini Ganga. And look down there, Sita. Can't you see? There's hundreds and hundreds, thousands of great rishis with pure hearts, just only wearing their kopans, performing their holy oblations in the Mandakini Ganga and raising their arms and praising the Lord. Such a beautiful scene. There is nowhere else in the whole world that is more pleasing than this. I think that leaving Ayodhya was a small thing, but coming here is a great treasure. The forest of Chitrakoot Mountain. Meanwhile, Bharat was sent the message that there was an emergency, he should come home. Why? Because when Sumantra told Dasarat about the condition of Sita, Ram, and Lakshman entering into the forest, his heart was broken so severely. That in the presence of his dear wives, he chanted the name of Ram and gave up his life. But we're not going to discuss these sad parts tonight. Bharat returned home. Everything was inauspicious. Ayodhya was like a ghost town. Everyone was just crying. Even the deities in the temples were crying. And father didn't come to greet him like he always did. He went to his mother and said, "What's happening here?" And she was just blissful. She said, Bharat, we are so fortunate. Your father's dead, and Ram's banished to the forest, and you're going to be the coronated the next king. This is all my arrangements for you. Aren't you happy?
Bharat was devastated.
He screamed at his mother. He said, I reject you. You are not my mother. You are my worst enemy. He went to see Kausalya. Kausalya just looked at him. She was thin, emaciated, pale, on the verge of death herself from separation from her beloved Ram. She said, Bharat, your plan is a success. Now, go ahead, sit on the throne, be the king and rule all of the world. But how can you enjoy it when your own Ram, who loved you more than his own life, has been banished to the forest? Oh, Bharat's heart was broken. He began to cry. He fell at her feet and begged her to understand. I knew nothing about the wicked conspiracy of my mother. He went to see Vasishtha Muni. Actually, what happened is Vasishtha Muni told him, you have to perform the last rites of your father. After all the rites were complete, Vasishtha Muni and the other Brahmins told Bharat that your father's dead, Ram's in the forest, Ayodhya needs a king. It's an emergency. We must coronate you immediately. Bharat Maharaj revealed his heart. I vow I will never sit on that throne. That is reserved for my beloved brother, Ram. I will go into the forest and I will convince Ram to return and be king, and I will assume the exile for the next 14 years. Now let us build a road into the forest and bring our armies and find Ram wherever he is and bring him back. When he said that, everyone in Ayodhya became alive. Previous, they were practically mentally dead in anguish. There was a hope. They all agreed with his proposal. And he became ecstatic just thinking of bringing Ram back. In less than a month, they built roads through the jungle. Sumantra was giving them some hints of where to go. They came to Guha Maharaj's place. Guha Maharaj, when he saw Bharat coming, he brought all of his soldiers. He says, compared to the army that is in front of us, we are no match. But it appears that Bharat may be coming to harm Ram. So all of us, with all of our whatever weapons we have, we should fight to death to protect Ram. Guha came and very respectfully greeted and honored Bharat. And after giving him gifts from the forest, he said, Bharat asked, where is my brother Ram? He said, if you are asking with an intention to cause any harm to him, then myself and all of my warriors are ready to fight war against you. Another arrow in his heart. I've come to beg Ram to come back to Ayodhya. I will take the exile for 14 years. I had nothing to do with my mother's cruelty. Guha was happy. They went to Prayag, to Bhardraj Muni's ashram. Should I continue? You sound very tired. at Bharadraja's Muni's ashram. Bharadraja Muni first they all offered respect to the sage, and then the sage spoke to them. Bharat, you are looking for Ram? You asking me where he is? What is your intention? Is it that you have come to the forest with your armies to destroy him? Now you have taken his throne? Are you satisfied? Coming from one of the greatest rishis in the world, words like this, Bharat Maharaj almost fell unconscious in anguish. He pleaded with the great sage to understand he had nothing to do with his mother's evil plot. Bharadraj Muni said, actually, I was just testing you. He said, bring all of your people here and spend the night. Bharat said, but you're just a simple sage with just some thatched huts. There's thousands of people in my entourage. How will we stay here? Bharadraja Muni said, I will make all arrangements. He went into meditation, chanted mantras, and by the power of his chanting mantras, Vishwakarma created beautiful palaces. For 40 miles around, there was fresh green grass with flowers and gardens and auspicious trees. Then he chanted another mantra, and tens and thousands of golden bowls filled with the most luscious fruits and roots and herbs just appeared. Wonderful feast. And then he chanted another mantra, and apsaras came and started dancing. Then he chanted another mantra, and the Gandharvas were singing and playing drums. Chanted another mantra, and beautiful celestial ladies started massaging the feet and the legs of all the soldiers. Chanted another mantra, and beautiful flowers were falling on everyone, and garlands were put around everyone's. It was a wonderful festival. Bharat introduced, this is Kausalya, the senior mother of Ram. And this is Sumitra, the mother of Lakshman and Shatrughna. And this is the vile, envious, wicked wretch named Kaikeyi, who I have disowned as being my own mother. Arivo. Meanwhile, Kaikeyi, when she saw that Bharat rejected everything she did, she woke up. She woke up from her maya. Sometimes that happens. We have to have a strong jolt in our life to actually wake us up to the illusion that we're in. Yasyaham anugrinami harishetatanam sharai. Sometimes Krishna takes things away to wake us up. When Bharadraja Muni heard him insult Kaikeyi, he said, I know the truth. Kaikeyi is an innocent and good-hearted mother. It is the devatas. They influence Mantara to bewilder Kaikeyi for their purpose. They want Ram in the forest, because in doing so, you will watch and see he will perform glorious activities for the ultimate welfare of all the world for all time. She is just an instrument. Be kind to her and never speak ill against her again. Bharat Maharaj was thinking about what the great sage said. The next morning, he showed them the way to Chitrakoot. The armies went through the forest. Meanwhile, Ram, Sita, and Lakshman were taking their bath in the Mandakini Ganga. So happy with the birds singing, so many beautiful songs, and the sages chanting pure mantras. with loving hearts. And they were just immersed in serving the great rishis and eating fresh fruits and being together. Ram, Sita, and Lakshman were enjoying life like never ever before, living in Chitrakoot. Ram told Sita that this 14 years will pass like 14 moments in Chitrakoot. So they heard some loud sounds. What is that? Ram said to Lakshman, climb up that tree and see what the sound is. So Lakshman climbed the tree, and from the top of the tree he said, Ram, I see dust rising. It appears like there's an army coming. And then Ram said, can you identify what is on the flag? He was looking closer. He said, I see a flag with the Kodivara tree. That's the flag of Bharat! And I see the elephant of our father Dasarat. He said, I know what's happening. Bharat is now the king. And he knows after 14 years, you're going to come and take over the kingdom. So he has come when you're helpless, living in the jungles with all his armies to kill you. Lakshman became overcome with anger. He was trembling. He jumped down from the tree and he pulled out his sword and he said, I will dissever that rascal's head. I will send him to the court of Yamaraj. When Ram saw this, he said, Lakshman, do not speak these words. Bharat loves me as much as you love me. He has never done anything to harm me. He has come, I'm sure, to beg me to return to Ayodhya and take the throne. He said, if you're going to think this way about Bharat, who I love as dear as my life, then you go back to Ayodhya and you sit on the throne and Bharat will stay here with me. And when Lakshman heard this, he became very much humbled. He hung his head down and said, actually, I'm in illusion. I'm sorry, my lord. I will never ever speak or suspect him of anything. I know that. The four of us have loved each other as intimate brothers all our lives. Anyways, Bharat, he got off his chariot and went forward with Guha and a few others. And there he saw through the forest, after a long walk, he saw the hut that was created by Lakshman. A beautiful, natural, made of wood and leaves. And he saw the two swords of Ram and Lakshman crossed in front of it. And their bows and quivers were sitting in formation at the door. He understood this was the place of Ram. Now, since I'm fast-forwarding, I'm going to also rewind a moment. Because this is kind of a spontaneous satsang. When he met Guha, he asked Maharaj Guha exactly everything that happened when he met Ram. And he told him, under that banyan tree, Ram matted his hair with the sap of the tree. When Bharat Maharaj thought of Ram with matted hair, wearing the skin of trees, and then he saw the bed of leaves that he slept on, and then he was told that even the fruits and roots he brought, he gave them to his horses and only drank water, Bharat was utterly devastated. His heart was broken. And he made a vow. Until Ram sits on the throne, I will wear tree bark. And right then and there, he matted his hair with the sap of the tree. And I will only eat fruits and roots. Fast forward, back to Chitrakoot. When he was looking at the cottage, he saw there was Ram, Sita, and Lakshman. Ram had matted hair, tree bark as clothes. Sita had tree bark as her clothes. It was too much pain to his heart to witness this. He began to cry, practically fell unconscious. And then he and Shatrughna ran toward Ram and Lakshman. Ram and Lakshman saw them coming. They were so happy. Bharat and Shatrughna fell at the feet of Lord Sri Ram. Lord Ramchandra picked up Bharat, who was weeping profuse tears. He picked him up and embraced him. The love of the embrace between Ram and Bharat was so great that the stones under their feet melted. And to this day, at that very spot at Chitrakoot Hill, is the footprints of Ram and Bharat in the stone. Lakshman embraced his brother Shatrughna, and in their love, after months of separation, the stone melted under their feet. Within a few minutes, the three mothers came, Kausalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. When Kausalya saw her beloved daughter-in-law, Sita, living in this simple condition, her heart melted. Sita bowed at her feet, and Kausalya lifted her up and embraced her. And the stone melted, and their footprints are still there today to bear witness to this glorious reunion. Ram asked Bharat that I see my father's elephant, but where is our father? Bharat explained that in separation from you, chanting your holy name, he passed from this world. When Ram heard this, tears poured from his eyes in separation from his beloved devotee. And he fell to the ground like a tree that bears ripe, delicious fruits, which is cut from its roots, falls to the ground. He laid there and became pale. Lakshman and Shatrughna somehow brought him back to consciousness. Sita and Lakshman looked upon Ram. Ram explained to them that our father is gone. They all wept for a long time. somehow or other stumbling, Ram was brought down to the Ganga, Mandakini, where he performed the last rites for his father by offering oblations in his holy name. After some time, Bharat revealed his heart, that I have come to bring you back to Ayodhya. Here is all the foremost citizens of the kingdom. They have all come with one voice to appeal to you to return and take your rightful throne. After all, according to the dynasty of Ragus, there has never been a time when the eldest son did not take the throne. It is our family tradition. It must be continued. You are the eldest son. You are the rightful heir. Ram said, I must protect the word of my father. He said, there is a way to protect it. I have matted my hair. I will put on the tree bark. I will remain in the forest for 14 years to take this horrible banishment. But you return to your home. All of the citizens have agreed with this. Lord Ramchandra refused. He said, my father's word must be fulfilled. Then Bharat, every possible argument his intelligence can contrive, he presented. He said, actually, it's already been fulfilled. My mother, Kaikeyi, forced our father to give the throne to me. Well, he gave the throne to me. So everything's done. So now the throne has been given to me, but I'm giving it back to you. So now come back to Ayodhya. There's no problem. And then Jabali, one of the ministers, he began to present all kinds of philosophical logic, which will take a long time to explain. And you don't look like you're in the mood for philosophy tonight. He was trying to convince Ram by some means to come back. Then Vasishtha Muni was presenting all kinds of scriptures and historical narrations to convince Ram to go back. Everyone, Kausalya, even Kaikeyi was begging Ram to come back. But Ram was firm that I cannot disgrace the honor of our dynasty or the word of my father. I will remain for 14 years. So when all else failed, Bharat placed wooden sandals before Ram and asked the Lord to place his feet in those sandals. Sri Ramchandra stood in the sandals for just a moment, and Bharat took those sandals on his head, and he vowed that he would place those sandals as the king of Ayodhya. Ram appealed to him to return soon and take care of my widowed mother, Kausalya, and always be fair and kind to your mother, Kaikeyi. Do not hold anything against her. Because if you hold any anger, vengeance, or hatred in your heart for anyone, it will burn your own good qualities to ashes. The quality of forgiveness is in line with truth. So yes, Bharat returned. And for 14 years, he never entered into the city of Ayodhya. He lived in the forest in a place called Nandigram, where he made a little hut exactly like the one that Lakshman made for Ram. with matted hair and tree bark, only eating fruits and roots and cow urine. And every day he worshipped the sandals of Ram and offered everything to the sandals of Ram. And in this way, he actually performed the responsibility of ruling the whole kingdom in this simple and humble lifestyle. When all the citizens of Ayodhya returned, Chitrakoot again became a very peaceful place. But Sri Ram told Lakshman and Sita and the other great sages and rishis, now that the people of Ayodhya know where I am, they may come here again to bother me. So we will leave Chitrakoot and enter deeply into the Dandakaranya forest, where many wonderful leelas took place. The beautiful story of Sri Ram is a story of selfless, pure devotion. We read about Guha Maharaj. We read about Keva. We read about Bharat. They had absolutely no selfish desires in their heart. Their exclusive inspiration, their exclusive motivation was the loving service of the Lord. That is the message. It is not only a great history with a wonderful story of romance and tragedy and adventure and war, but it is also in comedy. But through all of these incredible leelas is the common theme of selfless, unmotivated, loving devotion to the Supreme Lord. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he summarized the nature of all of these great souls in one verse. Na danam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajukatisha kamaye mama janamani janamanishwari bhavata bhaktiro haite kitvai. My Lord, I do not want wealth. I do not want beautiful ladies. I do not want the fame of being a great poet or a learned scholar. I do not want followers, worshippers, or disciples. I do not even want liberation from suffering. I only have one desire, that birth after birth after birth grant me unconditional loving service to your lotus feet. When we have that aspiration in our life, our heart is pure. When we have that aspiration in life only, are we qualified to enter into the spiritual realm. So Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana is teaching us that this is what is of true value in this human life. This pure, selfless disposition of service. Servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord with pure love. We see in all of these great personalities, the expression of their love is the willing to make sacrifice for the object of their love. Not to ask favors from their beloved, but to ask for service to be offered to their beloved at all costs. That is love. That is what Lord Sri Ramchandra descended into this world to give us. And he revealed this great treasure through Bharat, through Guha, through Hanuman, and through all of his devotees. And it was that love that our beloved Gurudev Srila Prabhupada so kindly sacrificed his life to give us. And in this age of Kali, the holy scriptures reveal that that love that is dormant and lost in our hearts can easily be revived by associating with pure-hearted souls, by hearing the glories of the Lord, by serving the Lord, and especially by the chanting of the holy name. Thank you very much. I would like to introduce a very special personality who has descended this evening from a skyscraper at the UN in New York City. He now works in an interfaith religious organization for the United Nations in New York. He was Srila Prabhupada, our Gurudev's very, very intimate associate. He traveled with Prabhupada for about 8 years. Huh? 5 years. He became a devotee in 1967. He became a devotee in 1967. And from that time, practically, he was in Prabhupada's personal entourage. Prabhupada personally taught him Sanskrit and made him the Sanskrit editors for all of his writings. And therefore, he traveled practically wherever Prabhupada went, all around the world, as Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, and doing various scholarly projects for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada loved him very dearly. He saw his qualification, his dedication, his devotion. In fact, on Prabhupada's Vyas Puja in London, the day after the installation of Radha Gokulananda, devotees from all over Europe and the world were coming to glorify Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, in his lecture, was glorifying Pradyumna Prabhu. He said, very soon, our new publication, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, will be coming out. And he said, and all credit goes to Pradyumna Prabhu. He said he has worked very hard, and it is because of his devotional efforts that Chaitanya Charitamrita will come. And then Prabhupada gave him a title, which is incredible. He said, I call him Pandit Mahashoy. Now, Mahashoy is the title that Jiva Goswami gave to Narottam Das Thakur. Most exalted title. He said, I call him Pandit Mahashoy. And he said, him and Arundhati, who was his wife, he said, they have worked very, very hard. Actually, he did work hard, but Prabhupada worked very hard. But he gave all credit to his disciple. Prabhupada accepted no credit himself. He just wanted to give all credit to those who were helping him. And in 1976, Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan. Could I tell one more story, Srinathji? This is not Ramayan, but it's... Yes. Maithili Mataji wants me to drink this, so I must drink this. It's a long story, but I'll make it very short. Prabhupada came to the Brahmachari ashram, which is way on a mountain, a lonely mountain through jungle of 3 miles, on a dirt road. And it was the tradition that whenever Prabhupada was at Guru Puja, a tray of cookies were given to him to distribute to all the children that were there, and both big and little children as well. That was tradition. Yes? So where we did, we had no oven. We just cooked on fire with wood. And we just put pots on flames to cook it. So they promised they were going to send cookies up. So when it came for Guru Puja, the temple was filled up with people. And I asked, where is the cookies? Because I was the head pujari. And they told me, we forgot the cookies. Now to us, this was a major disaster. You're thinking, so what, cookies? But it was the first time in 7 years Prabhupada came there. And we had nothing to offer him. So I just ran up, I just took the Didi's plates of silver and put all the Didi's Mahaprasad on the plates and decided I'll just give this to Prabhupada. But he was sitting on his Vyasasan with devotees chanting and dancing all around him. So I went with this plate, and Prabhupada's secretary at the time looked at this plate and said, what is that? I said, I'm giving it to Prabhupada. He said, where are the cookies? I said, they forgot the cookies. He said, you cannot give Prabhupada that. So, and he was big and I was small. So I was very much distraught. And I went back to the pujari room. And I thought, how could we not offer Prabhupada anything? I'll go around the other side. So I went to the other side of this large kirtan of devotees with the tray of Mahaprasad. And who was there? The other half of his entourage, Pradyumna Prabhu. He said, what is that? I said, it's Mahaprasad. He said, well, where are the cookies? He said, they forgot the cookies. I said, please, please let me offer this to Prabhupada. And he smiled and he brought me right to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked at me and he smiled and took the plate and put it right on his lap and started eating. I was very happy. And then distributing to everyone. So that very wonderful, special service I was allowed was by the mercy of Pradyumna Prabhu. And all the tapes of Srila Prabhupada, you all know his voice. Whenever you hear Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and whenever you hear the reading of Sanskrit and the reading of the translations, that's Pradyumna Prabhu's voice. Immortally recorded in almost every tape of Srila Prabhupada's lectures. I've been begging Pradyumna Prabhu to come here for many years, and today he has come. Could you stand up for just a moment? Let us very loudly welcome him to. Thank you very much.